Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
Folks, unfortunately, it is official. Life is going to get harder for the average American. It is just where we are in the system, in the process, and I think we need to have an honest discussion about, frankly, not being average. We're going to have a conversation with the one and only Dion from Dion Talk. How you doing, buddy?
Howdy. I'm doing great. I'm excited about this topic. I was taking notes.
Awesome. Awesome. And Matt, how are you? You've been retired for a month now. How does it feel?
I don't miss it.
I don't miss it.
Didn't think I would, but yeah, I don't miss it. I don't wake up itching for something to do. I slow my roll into my day. So slow, Dion would be proud.
Oh, I love that. And you're just getting your sea legs under you. Just wait till you take your first nap. That'll be pretty awesome.
I fell asleep accidentally on the couch. Yes. And I got smacked by a child to be awakened. But I enjoyed the time that I had. It was wonderful. Yeah.
There you go. Well, guys, I want to talk about what I think is true. And frankly, to be clear, it's true today, but it's really been true over the last 30 years of my adult life. It just feels like it's getting harder and harder. I've read scary numbers, as I'm sure you have, that 56% of Americans can't afford a $1,000 emergency. They would have to put it on a credit card or beg, borrow, and steal from family members to pay that. And, you know, there was a time in my adult life where the number was $500 and $300. And it's just, it is getting harder. And unfortunately, the last thing that I think is staring us in the face is the upcoming recession. Will it be this year? No idea. But one is coming. That you can bank on. And you know, we haven't had one at least meaningfully for 12 or 13 years, and I think it could hurt a lot of people. So, Matt, I'll go to you first. What do you think about life getting harder for the average American?
Yep, absolutely it is. You hope it's not stagflation.
Right.
You know, you hope it at the very best that you know, just inflation slows. You know, recessions are can be tough. You know, they're tough to live through. And then, you know, then it's not only that you go into one, but then the duration of it and then the severity of it, right? Is it's like, because everybody, certainly those that are in business that have employees depend on them for paychecks, mm-hmm. you know, one of the nice things is that it's interesting to see how it affects rents. It's interesting to see how it affects, you know, small business. Because there's no exact calculation of here's how much it's going to hurt because you just don't know. And so the question is, you know, one of the things you and I always talk about when we were in the software game was be close to revenue.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not close to revenue and you're like the brainchild of some executive and the product and they're trying to bring that to market, run, Luke, run, get away from it as fast as you can, because they are not going to be committed to that when earnings aren't there. They are going to be going right back to the flagship products or to the ones that they've already invested a ton in, saying this needs to go to market right now because of X. But if there's no revenue there, run. So, yeah, it's going to be painful. I mean, recessions hurt. And then the question is that ironically, though, recessions don't push rent down. So it's a good spot to be in being a landlord.
All righty, Dion, what do you think? It's official. Life is going to get harder for the average Americans. How's that hit? What do you think about?
So as a reward to anybody who makes it this far in one of my videos that I'm in, and to shock Matt, I'm going to take a contrarian view.
Shocking!
Yeah, well, why not? Of course.
So anybody who takes notes during a video, please have your pen and paper ready, because I'm about to say something that you're not going to want to hear.
Shocking.
Life is more freaking easy right now than at any point in time in history.
That's true.
That's
the problem.
Agreed.
Ooh!
Yes.
That's
here's
the problem.
Yes. Right. We take currency, for example. In the beginning, we have a barter system, but it's really hard when you don't have to carry things to trade. So we go, how much time does it take to mine up gold? We'll make gold a currency. Gold's kind of heavy, so we'll make this paper form that says the bank has my gold, so you'll take my paper. But that's not as easy as credit cards or a debit card, so you can carry it around with you and have access to your bank from anywhere. And then we don't even like that, so we go, I'm going to buy it now, pay later. It just gets easier and easier and easier to do things. So remember, easy choices now makes life harder later. Hard choices now makes life easier later. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to things like life is harder now because housing is unaffordable, I'm going to say this, and people aren't going to want to hear it either. And I'm on your channel, so I'll edit it. Bull crap. So people say, well, you just can't buy a house. Okay, well, because in 1970, a house was maybe $30,000 or $40,000, right? Mm-hmm. But how far was it to the closest grocery store? The movie theater. There were no Lowe's and Home Depot to go. It was a general store that had a couple of saws 50 miles away. And your car, if you were lucky, you could drive that far if you left the air conditioning off because it would overheat if you turned it on. Versus, nobody wants to move to Gary, Indiana right now, where they actually had a BOGO deal where if you bought a house and were a contractor, they'd give you one for free from the city because they had 13,000 vacant units that they were trying to, houses that they were trying to revitalize with. People want to buy a house where they can go, what's my walkability score? And so, yeah, that's going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can move to a place that was like your parents, where I use myself as an example for my kids. Is it really hard to buy a house right now? Yes. I bought a house in around, it was either 99 or 2000 for $100,000. Was that easier? Yes. But it was in Yelm, Washington, that had about 6,000 people, 45-minute drive to the closest Safeway, no Walmart, no Lowe's, no Home, doesn't even still have a Lowe's or a Home Depot. But in the 24 years now of owning that place, they've got a Walmart. Home Depot purchased a plot of land, hasn't developed it yet. There's a Safeway. There's a movie theater. There's more than one red blinking light that there was when I moved in. And so, yeah, if you went to buy a house there now, it would be $400,000. But if you go 35 or 40 minutes from any grocery store off into the middle of nowhere, like I bought my house 24 years ago and you bought a house today, it's $100,000. The problem is it is easier now, because here's the thing. In 2000 or 99, when I purchased that, the interwebs was being developed. We had dial-up. There was no social media. There were no smartphones. I mean, there might have been MySpace at that time. I don't think it was out. I don't know when that came out. But we didn't have to go on Instagram every day and go, oh, everyone I know is riding a Sea-Doo on a lake that has a great view. I'm failing because I've got my family off here where we can afford it to have a better future. The problem is, life is easier now than at any point, and people keep making those easy choices. You have... It's in your daily update this morning, 56% of Americans can't afford a $1,000 expense. Here's why. It's very easy to live a life where you don't have to have $1,000. You have GoFundMe if you have a major health concern. You have debt forgiveness if you don't have any money and you have a medical expense. You have credit cards, personal line of credit. You have... all of the subsidies, but how long does it take to actually get evicted? People aren't worried about those things. It's so easy. People keep making those easy decisions that screw over their life. And I'll get off my soapbox now.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about again on this kind of topic of life's getting harder for the average American is that concept of consumption. I think whether it's the debt, $1,000 or any of this, we are a consumer-based economy. It's been true my entire life and long before that. But we have made it increasingly easy to be consumers. And now, given social media, we're fanning the flames and you know, making people feeling inadequate for, you know, this or that reason for not buying this or that Sea-Doo or whatever, right? So, you know, don't be average. I mean, that's really the thing that I want people to realize. If the average American can't spend $1,000, just don't be average. The average American is divorced, overweight, and can't afford $1,000. Why the hell do you want that life, right? Stop being average. You have 2 out of 3.
I was like, not me, me, not me. I'm good.
One for three. Yeah. it's pretty amazing. So again, I think I think what's in front of us, and I want people on our channels to realize that I do think this is coming. And I think it's the only thing you can argue is timing. It's coming. Mm-hmm. And that is a recession. And if we realize we've been, other than the, you know, 3-month recession during the pandemic, we haven't really had a nasty one for 10 to 12 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this thing called reversion to the mean, and that might come back. And if the average recession's 8 months, you know, I think the longest one was 18, you know, we can have a 12-month recession pretty easy. And again, in the scope of your life, a 12-month recession is a blip. But when you're in it, I've lived through two nasty recessions, and it's not fun. And if you're not prepared, it's tough. Matt, you went through the same too, right? .com and the great financial crisis. You both hurt you a bunch.
Yeah. .com was us, right? It was the tech sector. So it was, we felt it more than anybody did. You know, it doesn't make it special. It just means factually that's where it happened. The .com bomb.
Yeah. Well, also we were residential real estate investors in the other one. So we got smacked by both of them.
Yeah. I'm just looking and seeing what I'm doing today to realize how I'm going to get my bigger smack down now.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if the session just Dion gave just everybody right there was a little bit too angry, man, get off my lawn. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
But Dion, you forgot to account for feelings, and this is a problem because
everybody get canceled.
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, everybody is so soft. You know, you guys, Mike, you are smart enough to not self-manage. And Dion, you know, you hire handymen. And so when we have like small little projects, like we're hiring early 20 somethings, and holy Lord, if we go to war, we're screwed. Like we are just screwed because nobody wants to actually do the work. It's like walking around a city job site where you've got 11 guys leaning on shovels and two guys in the hole. And one guy is actually pointing at the other guy to dig different. Mm. Like it's just unbelievable the lack of productivity that we see. And I have actually, I realized that, you know, I really get on this kick about hire fast, fire faster.
Yeah.
And then about a year ago, I realized I wasn't doing it. A year ago, I realized I wasn't doing it. I was like, I've given this guy like 7 shots. He's fired on principle now. Like literally I had that awakening moment where I was like, I'm not doing what I said, what I do. I stopped doing it because I started actually listening. I'm tired of listening. I want the job done. I'm paying for the job to be done. Get it done. And if you can't, I'll find somebody else that will. And so what's really good is that we've got guys now that listen, that follow through, that get the job done. And I said, listen, your job is to make my life easier. That's why I pay you. Yeah. If you're not making my life easier and I have to do more and manage more and do more and take care of more, you're gone. So people need to understand the contractor, the tenant, the friend, they're not going to get better, and they don't get better when times are tough. They get softer. They're not resilient. They get softer. So do yourself a favor, hire fast, fire faster. And that includes friends. Because we are in it, and you need to be around other like-minded people that are positive thinking, that want to be really the ones setting the temperature. You know, mm-hmm. We want them being thermostats. You need to be a thermostat, not a thermometer.
Right.
You know, if you're that thermostat, you're the one setting the temperature. If you're a thermometer, you're just telling everybody what the temp is. No one needs that. No one needs that in a tough time. Well, you know, that's really hard. Yeah, anything worth doing is. You know, I see you don't do hard things in your life. And that's why you're a 40-something renter. And you're going to work until 65 or 70 years old. I hope you love what you do and that your body can handle it. Because you know what? I feel bad. I'm around contractors in their mid-40s. Their bodies are falling apart. Their bodies are falling apart. They got arthritis. They got bad knees. They got bad hips. They got a bad shoulder. Oh my word, I'm investing in, you know, companies that actually are doing joint replacements, because those poor guys, you can't do that kind of heavy labor for 25 or 30 years and expect you're not going to need shoulders and hips and all this other stuff. So yeah, people, that younger generation, I don't care if you don't like it. They're soft. I work with them all the time, and they are soft like puppy poo after a week of rain. It's awful to work with. Awful. And you better buck up. And if you're part of that group, you better be a thermostat and not a thermometer, because it's going to get tough. And if you're the woe is me, you're going to lose 5 years of your life. you know, with what's going to happen in this next recession, because it's going to happen. And if you choose it to let you hurt you, it will.
Yeah.
Now off on my soapbox.
Yeah. The other thing that I think about being average is it takes so little effort.
Agreed.
Not to be average.
Agreed.
And, you know, my hope for the recession is that it stings, but it stings in a way that it's a wake-up call. Because again, if we think about the younger generation, right, certainly Gen Z and maybe younger millennials, they were around during the great financial crisis, but they weren't making choices, right? They
weren't 14 years ago.
Yeah, they were around, so they may have had some, you know, inkling of what's going on, but they weren't
sure
in the workforce, right?
Nope.
I remember the .com one because, again, I graduate college like 95, 94, 95, something like that. And, you know, we had 3 or 4 year run in tech that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. I was at a private company. I was employee 13. You know, we filed our S-1. We were going, you know, we were on the way to go public, and then all hell broke loose and we ended up laying off half the company and, you know, getting bought for pennies. But there was a 3 or 4 year run where it just felt like it was easy. Then it got stung. And I really think there's two things that could happen. You could either be crushed and defeated and could wash you out, or you can kind of learn the lesson, be better prepared next time, because recessions are normal, right? They're part of the business cycle. They can't be engineered away. And, you know, I was stronger the next time, right? I got prepared during the great financial crisis. I made financial moves that were genius at the time and great timing because I've been through one before. So my hope is that it stings and it's a wake-up call. And maybe they're not as soft. But again, if you have a 12-year run where everything's easy and the government is giving you money, you made them soft. And maybe we need a little sting to see who can fight and see who will run.
It's going to be a lot of running, Mike. Get ready to be disappointed. It's going to be a lot of running, a lot of turtling. It's going to be, I have a question for you, Mike. Do you have more cash than you've ever had right now?
No.
But close.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, I put a significant down payment on a second home.
Yeah.
Because I could.
And you have more revenue than you've ever had.
Oh, without question. Yes.
Right. So all those things, Dion, same for you, right? More revenue than you've ever had, and you're getting closer to the same cash position as you've ever, the best cash position you've ever had. We're trending that way as well. What do we know that everybody else doesn't, or a lot of other people don't know? We've been through these things. We've been through these corrections, right?
Yeah. And the beauty of a correction is that's when wealth is created.
Yes. Transferred.
Wealth is transferred. There, that's a better word. That's a better word. Dion, what do you think of all this? I mean, one of the things that you did is you kept looking for a pension. Then, you know, you did something else. So, you know, recession's coming. You can argue when. What do you think of all this?
So it comes back to that, those easy decisions making life harder, right? For the last, and then we'll just take the last 4 years, 2020. Okay. Like there was, the world fell apart. What's happened since then? In 2020 and 2021, according to the New York Times, there was 156 new real estate agents, 156,000.
Oh, 1,000, yeah.
That's 60% more than the years before. Mm-hmm. Because it was easy. Everyone was transacting homes. Rates had dropped. And so now that easy decision is turning into a hard decision. So we've talked several times about the recession, and you've defined recession is when your neighbor gets laid off. Depression is when you get laid off.
Exactly.
It comes back to me within these last 4 years, the content in our space, the content creators that get the most views are the ones selling fear, the Frash Bros.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah.
My concern, and for a while I cared, but I'm at the point of, if you've been hearing that for 4 years and it's been wrong every 3 days, but you're still in their comments saying, thank you for telling me not to buy a house. I'm so glad I didn't. Look at how interest rates are now. it's like a lost person. That person is gone.
Right? My world. I've been there for a long time.
Right.
That's like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
So if we hit a recession, like Matt said, a good position to be is a landlord that owns rentals, because generally rents go up in a recession. Four out of the last six recessions, home prices went up. One of those, home prices went down because the home price crash was the cause of the recession, right? So statistically, more times than not, home values are going to go up. Rents go up when there's economic difficulties, because people who can't buy become renters. People who lose their house become renters. More rental demand on a limited supply increases the cost, the value that we can charge. My concern right now is for the person who only has a W-2.
Yes, exactly. That's the lesson. Like, if you go back to one of my darkest days, like in the dot-com crisis, right, where half the company's getting whacked. And yes, I was close to revenue, but you never know, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, they're like picking Bob or Mark, and one of them's going, even though they're great. If you only have a W-2, that's because, again, you could be a rock star. You could be the – I had to lay off when I was an executive some of the top talent just because wrong geography, wrong city, wrong whatever. We were trying to control – I remember I laid off the number one rep because he lived in the wrong city. He couldn't cover the patch because everywhere he would fly, he'd have to get a connection, which just makes it, you know, costly and – you know, you can't serve as many clients. So it's just, you've got to prepare. You've got to be ready. You've got to own assets. And you got to be in the game for 10 years. You can't bust out. I mean, there's a lot of people in the kind of real estate game, wholesaling, flipping, all of that, who's been killing it the last couple of years. They're going to get spanked. Right. They got spanked a little bit in Q1 last year. Right. They lost $100,000 or whatever. But then rates dropped and they suddenly were back to making money. There's a lot of people that aren't preparing for what's coming. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I see it. I mean, I'm watching a lot of car channels right now, You know, there's Flying Wheels. He's actually based out of New Hampshire. It's like 400,000 subs. There's Lucky out of Vegas. He's got, you know, 500,000 subs. There's a lot of car channels I'm watching because I'm car shopping. And and they talk about that. And they talk about that market and what's going on there. That market is getting obliterated.
Yeah.
Because nobody took, or very few, I won't say no one, but almost no one, took their Stimmy bucks and bought a house. But almost everyone took Stimmy bucks and upgraded their car.
Yes.
And paid massive premiums. I had a buddy of mine, and you'll rename nameless, Scott, the last name. And so he went out and he bought a Rivian, and he way overpaid. And I said, I want to go and invent some really bad idea and basically have you pay me well over six figures to become a beta tester, because that's what you are with a Rivian.
Yeah.
And I actually love the truck. It's really cool, but it's a newer platform. But he overpaid for that. He paid what's called a market adjustment is what they call it. There were people that were paying $20,000, $100,000 for some of these six-figure cars in adjustments upward. And now banks are rolling that debt like they rolled the debt before. And so now there's people with $1,000 payments on cars that are worth $40,000 and they're underwater $25,000, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to get crushed. It's going to be that's the new tsunami. That's what's crushing people. And the problem.
Yeah, so I want to poke at that.
Go ahead.
I want to poke there, cause I don't watch these channels. I'd love to know, are they seeing, Lucky and the like, particular pain at what I'll call luxury vehicles like the Rivian, or are we talking up and down?
It's all bad everywhere. So what they're really seeing is the sub $10,000 car is the only thing that's increasing in value, because it's so low end at the bottom of the market. And people are having to find a way to put together cash. So they just have a car.
Right.
And thankfully that makes all of my cars worth more money, because I don't own anything worth more than 10 grand.
Right? Not yet.
Not yet anyway, but this is what we're seeing. And I'm seeing it with, it was really funny. I'm driving through my parking lots, I have a couple of parking lots in some of my bigger buildings. Man, they've got a lot of nice cars in there. It's ironic how some of them are still late on rent. And I know that they have big, huge, massive payments, you know, brand new 2023, 2024 stuff. It's amazing. Talk to some of my contractor friends and they pull up. These are $90,000 trucks now.
Yeah.
$90,000 trucks. And it's just like, well, yeah, you know, I need it for the business. Nah, you don't. You could have a $40,000 truck. It's going to do exactly the same thing. It's just 5 years older. That's all it is. So I think that that's going to be that, sadly, is I think the biggest thing that's going to delay people from buying a home is going to be the bad mistakes that they made, the car payment. And it's not just because that car payment's going to blow up. It's because their credit's going to get torched. Their credit is going to get torched because they're responsible for the delta of what they owe and what the company sells it for. When they go to auction, when they repo that car and then they go sell it at auction, if you owed 40 and it's only, and they only get 20, guess what? You owe them 20 grand. That, and that showing up on your credit report for as long as it will until they discharge it. I mean, that is a nightmare. That is years, and that is years of credit repair. So the companies that are going to see the biggest boom in this are repo companies and credit repair companies. That's who's going to see the next boom.
All right, let's switch gears kind of halfway through to what people on our channel should be doing, right? People on our channel's not average, certainly don't want to be average. But, you know, what are some things they should be thinking about doing? We'll go to you first, Dion.
So it's really hard to put this into words into a way that I think the problem is me being able to explain it, not the person being able to understand it. Coming into a recession, I would prefer to be a landlord, but I would almost prefer to be somebody who has a $50,000 a year job than be somebody who has a $200,000 a year job.
Oh, I agree.
When a recession hits, the person with the $200,000 a year job, the average person still in that 56% who doesn't have $1,000 without going into debt for the next emergency is living at that $200,000 threshold. And when that recession hits and your job goes away, it's really hard to replace that versus that $50,000 person living at the edge of their means too. There's a lot of jobs out there that pay $50,000 a year. So as a landlord, some of the things I think we could do as a recession is, and I came up with a video 3 days ago now. So my brother called me in the middle of a nap on Friday and said, this is my brother who does not invest in real estate, right? He has a paid off house, debt free. He doesn't know who Dave Ramsey is. I don't think he's ever opened a book, but he's doing really well, but he's never owned a rental. And he just calls me in the middle of my nap and he says, is there any way that a landlord can make more money without raising rents? And I think he was just looking for that. Is it possible? Yes or no, right? And I said, well, yeah, you know, the landlord could shop around for a better insurance rate, raise their deductibles, get their premiums lowered. They could refinance their loan. And as soon as I started talking, he basically said, oh, okay, cool, thanks, because he got what he wanted, hung up the phone. But then I sat there thinking, in less than 10 minutes, I came up with like 17 ways a landlord can increase your income without raising the rent. So we can raise the rents, but let's just say we take that off the table. What are all of the other ways that you can do it? And I just listed out those things. So what I think a landlord should be doing as we're coming into a recession is looking at your entire portfolio and thinking, how can I lower the bottom line to increase the top line, even if we can't raise rents? Because there's a lot of ways to do that.
Yeah, I think that's really wise advice. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I actually watched that video where DM was basically coming up with all the different stuff, you know, and it was funny because I literally had that conversation with Ashley within the last few days as well. You know, it was just kind of like, okay, here are the things that we're doing. And we're just, you know, going through and being good operators of our businesses, fine tuning. And I think that that's one of the things, you know, as a, it's a different task. Like you do a great job of that, Mike, because you're getting the file from your property manager. And you're listening to you're reading their notes and you're hearing what they have to say about the market and the tenants. And you're seeing how many people are now, you know, a week late or 2 weeks late, and you're starting to see those trends. And so we start to see those too, you know, as a self-manager, as somebody that's actually in the field, we can make the choice to just say, you know what, we're not going to rehab that unit for $12,000 right now. We're just going to put it back on the market and we're going to take our little bit lower of a rent. And so I think that everybody then gets to be an operator. And that's what we talk about, becoming an elite operator, managing and running your business like a CEO does and saying, you know what, it's better off keeping the powder dry now and not trying to go get that extra $150 It's better off keeping that 12 grand dry right now and just saying, I'd rather keep the 12 than get an extra 100, 100 and a half a month on that unit. The other thing too is that, you know, aside from the raising rents, which I thought was great, I think that, you know, Dion nailed it in that video saying, you know, that's not the first place you go. That's the last place you go. Totally agree. Right. Pick up operational efficiency. And so I think that everybody should be going through their business with a fine tooth comb, really understanding their business. This is where we talk about acquisition stabilized, but then optimized. Almost no landlords ever get to optimized. And that's where you want to be, because that's when your portfolio really starts working for you, where you're just fixing things occasionally, but you're optimized. So you know you have all the things that you need to reduce your costs as much as possible. That way there's no more margin or thick amount of margin sitting on any bone that you got to get through. So yeah, management of the business.
Yeah. So again, when I think about what's coming up in a recession, I go back to kind of where you went first, Matt, is like get close to revenue. That's how you protect that. I don't think a lot of people know what that means unless you're a sales guy. Mm-hmm. So let's break it down for, you know, folks in marketing or accounting or customer service. When we say get close to revenue, you know, how does an accountant do that? Or how does somebody in customer service do that? What do you think, Matt?
Well, I mean, from a customer service perspective, I don't know that you have a whole lot of control about that, you know, because you're just the one at the front lines answering the phone. But, you know, for me, if I'm in that role, I don't know what I'd do. It's not like you can go to your boss and say, I want to be customer service for this product over here. Right. But what I probably would be doing, the things that are in my control, is I am getting there earlier. I'm leaving later. And I'm asking whoever my boss is or whoever my boss's boss is, hey, is there anything special project wise that you need that I can hop on that I can help out with? I become more attentive, right? Because the last thing that you're going to, that's the last person you're going to cut, the one that's literally asking for more work. And people are like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. Fine, get laid off. I don't care. Your choice, whatever. They're going to have to make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think about customer service, the things that I would be doing is trying to stand out. And one of the things I actually coached a young man on a couple of decades ago was start noticing the questions you're getting and create some kind of weekly trend report or weekly hot list, or just do something that no one else is doing and share that with people around you. Right. One of the things that is underappreciated about customer service is, if you do it right, you can actually feed product marketing, right? What are changes to the app or the product that need to come? You can feed education, right? Where are the issues? Customer support can be a window to revenue, but you've got to stand out and not look at yourself as customer service, right? So I think that's interesting. Dion, you demoted yourself all the way to CEO. What are some things you think about when you think about service and getting close to revenue?
So instead of getting close to revenue, because that's from your backgrounds, kind of makes sense. I'd never heard of it put that way. I mean, it aligns basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I grew the company from 6 staff to 60. We went from one location to 5, and we went from, you know, making 60 grand a year to several million dollars a year. Right. And the idea was, like Matt said, hire slow, fire fast. So there were times where, because of whatever's going on in the economy, legislation, or changes with the VA or something, you have to downsize. And when we look around, it was never who's doing the hardest work or who's performing the most, right? It's the way you put it is who's close to revenue. So we'd have an instructor who is teaching. And so how do you get close to revenue when you're teaching people how to drive trucks? But if he's teaching in a Class A vehicle and he keeps taking his students by a company around here called Miles Sand and Gravel, and he points out the cement mixer trucks and the dump truck companies, and he points out what a prevailing wage job for the county is, and starts out at $56 an hour. And this was like 4 years ago. So it's COLA has brought it up from there. And then all of a sudden you have that guy's student or that girl's students, that instructor students coming in and saying, hey, what does it take to take that cement mixer course or that dump truck course to get that certificate? That's not the person you let go.
No.
Right. And so that was an instructor who, and it possibly looking back, he was probably thinking, if I teach those, I get overtime, right? So in his mind, it was what benefited that person. But that's a specific. Think of how your company is making money,
Yeah.
What can you do at work that aligns with that? Because why does your company exist?
Right.
With the purpose
for profit
is for profit. And a not-for-profit just means they take the profit and put it back into the business. Doesn't mean they don't make profit. Mm-hmm. So figure out where the profit is, where that revenue source is, and then figure out maybe your position doesn't actually directly interact with it, but how can you impact it? And that could be something as simple as, I had a furniture delivery company business, and it was all of these contractors. So I had a couple of trucks, and we were contractors competing with each other for spots. And the way that it was the Bon Marché or Macy's or whatever was doing it is they would say, however many calls of compliments we get, that's who's kind of ranked on who we're going to keep using. And if we don't get compliments, we're going to let you go. So does your company have that? Like Lowe's and Home Depot, you know, if you go to the bottom of the receipt, you can fill out a thing. My tack was never ask for a compliment. Figure out what resonated with the customer. And if I did some delivery thing, I would say, here's the number you can call and say if I did anything wrong, because I don't want to do it again with a customer in the future. Make sure that this was a good, positive experience. Give them the number right in their hand. So the list of things was people would have 5 to 10 compliments, and I would have 400.
Mm.
Because the idea of if I've done anything wrong, pointed out, would get the compliments. There's something that you can do to get customers to interact with your company and know that you had a positive experience. So even if you're in a customer service position, you can show to your management that you're important without telling them you're important.
Exactly. Exactly. So what I want to do as we kind of round out this session is talk about what happens in a recession and basically how the dominoes fall and why recessions end. And again, remember, recessions, generally speaking, are, let's call it a year. Expansions are a decade. But it sucks to go through them. Mm-hmm. So at some point during a recession, the Federal Reserve will undoubtedly cut rates at a minimum. They could also start doing QE if it's bad. So rates get cut. And again, when a recession comes, they won't be quarter point cuts. They will be halves, three quarters. It will be violent. That will likely happen over a course of several months, probably quarters, right? It will be the elevator down. At some point, well, let's talk about the other things that happen in a recession. So the Fed will do that. The other thing that will happen, and Matt, you kind of talked about this with cars, but it happens in companies, it happens all over, is there will be companies that can't afford their debt. Mm-hmm. And many of them will go bankrupt. They will get sold for parts. There will be loan workouts. There will be like credit repair. It will get ugly. There will be people who allocated dollars foolishly, and they will be punished, both real dollars and debt.
Mm-hmm.
That will produce higher sale prices on mm-hmm. things like cars, trucks, mm-hmm. equipment, multifamily, just anywhere where debt went and prices got stupid, especially if it's variable rate debt, pain is coming.
Yeah.
But at some point, rates will be low enough. Financial stress, fire sales will be out there, and there will be people hovering or vacuuming up deals
yep.
at crazy prices.
Yep.
So that's what's coming, and get prepared. Matt, you have any thoughts on all that?
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to time the market, the best time is right when you hit the starting trend downward. Because then you can buy and you can get a great price, and you're buying it with a garbage rate. So not everybody else is in the game. Mm-hmm. And so then you watch it and you start watching it down, and then people are trying to catch the falling knife. So the house is, you know, ticked up from 300 to 400 and 450, and then it starts to roll over, and then it goes to 440 and 430. And then you're like, okay, but debt's still expensive. The numbers aren't awesome, but they're okay. You better be ready on the top end of that rollover. Because you can buy there with the 7% rate. And then in a year, when the economy is really junk, rates are 4.5 and 5, then you're refinancing that rate. And the problem is that value of that house starts going back up because people are looking for payment. So if you're trying to time that market, you're trying to get it just after it's rolled over 10%, maybe, you know, as just a random number. And try and buy into that at that number. Dion just got it. But you're trying to get into that number because then your debt's still expensive, right? But then that's when you then watch that debt get really inexpensive, right? Because that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, I love all of that. But folks, don't get ARMs. You just never know.
No. Scary. But let's be honest, Mike, that's what people do.
Oh, of course.
That's what people, like, we don't recommend that. I'm not recommending any of that stuff, Blake. But if you're trying to time the market, that's what the timers do.
Yeah.
They're trying to get it on the rollover. And then they're like, hey, I believe there's going to be a recession in the next year. I believe it's going to be so bad. I'm going to take the ARM right now. Yeah. But even ARMs might be going off at a discount right now because they know that. Maybe. So it's really a financial game. It's really financial chicken. And you don't want to play it, especially if you're small.
No. Yeah. Especially if you're small, where one whoops could send you the wrong way. So Dion, you got a lot. You could really make some moves during this recession. What are you looking at? Are you going to pick up another fixer upper, or what are you going to be looking to do?
So this is all of the dollars that I wipe my tears with. I have all of these dollars because I don't make dollar bets with you two. If I made dollar bets with you two, these all dollars would be your dollars. Because I'm not as smart. I'm not as
I'm not buying
seasoned.
That.
But, uh-huh. I don't have Matt, you can look at it and you can go, here's what's going on with rates, here's when it rolls over, here's the valley, here's the peak. You understand all that stuff. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I could look at a chart and go, here's what happened in 5 or 10 years ago, right? But I don't want to think about what's happening in the future. So I could tell when you said if you're trying to time the market, there was like sarcasm that came out in your voice on what we think of people who time the market. I don't. There's two things that tell me when to buy. Right. And it's am I ready? Which means I don't have anything major going on in my life. I've studied my market. I have the reserves, down payment, closing costs, and all of that. And the second thing is I found a great deal.
Yeah. Right.
So what am I going to do in this recession? If I was in growth mode, I'd be hunting for the great deals.
Yep.
Since I'm in stabilization, optimization, retire and do nothing mode, I'll buy the great deals when they hit me in the face.
That's right.
I'm not out there actively spending 30 minutes a day studying each market, because here's my fear. The great deals are out there.
Oh, and they will become
greater.
So again, this happens every time.
It does.
Folks, I hope they hear this. What is going to happen is when it gets hard, more and more people will make more and more excuses. And our competition disappears.
It does.
Just disappears.
Yep.
And then they will be the same crying, whining little babies 5 years from now saying, I wish I did. I wish I did. I wish I did. Do you know, it was in 2010. That was the bottom of my market. I mean, every market bottomed at different times.
Yep.
There was nobody buying.
No. Yep.
Think about that.
Yep.
Think about that. It's crazy.
In nine and 10, that's what it was like here. Nobody. Like, we went from a typical inventory on duplexes of like 5 to 50.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was getting my pick. I was like, ooh, that one's ridiculous. Like, it was like, you weren't picking great deals. You were picking every deal was like, holy cow, this thing sold for, you know, a year and a half ago, this thing sold for 400 and now it's 275. That my market didn't correct 60 or 70%. Mine was about 30, you know? And so, but you also went from an inventory of being able to pick from 5 to 50.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, please God, let this last a little bit longer, because, you know, I was doing the house hack thing. So it was like buy, fix it. And then I was just like one more year. Yes. And so that 5 year downtrend, that's where I picked up basically 5 properties. I picked up 5 house hacking properties in those 5 years. And that's in large part, you know, to what I had the cash refi out of recently in the, you know, last 2 years.
Yeah, it's going to be wild to watch. I want to kind of wrap this one up. Dion, you talked earlier about finally giving up on the idiots on the Crash Bro channels and the comments thanking them. So I want to applaud you for finally coming over to my side. I don't know how you can tolerate all those folks. It's crazy.
So it's a sliding scale. There are people that are still salvageable, that are open-minded enough, but there are the people where. And so if you look at Facebook, I don't know how many friends or followers you have. I have like 4,000 friends and a bunch of people follow me on Facebook because I make posts about real estate there. But my blocked list is 3 times that. I'm trying to find the max. You can have 5,000 friends on Facebook. There's a cap. I don't know what the blocked cap is, because as soon as I see they're arguing from a point of emotion with no logic, it's That, block. That's what people should do with their Crash Bro channels out there. Just block them. And so to wrap it up, the last thing I would say is, well, I don't time the market on when to buy, and I don't suggest that anyone does that. I do watch the market to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is, there might be a time to refinance.
Exactly.
And there might be a time right now today to do a recast instead of a refinance, depending on what you want to happen with your cash flow. And looking at a second mortgage or a HELOC, if you don't want to mess with the good debt, the good interest rate that you have on your existing debt, right? So I'll look at the overall market from that perspective. Yeah. So that's timing it with known existing current data, not projecting
right.
what we think is going to happen.
Very, very cool. And where can people find you?
Right here on YouTube, Dion Talk Financial Freedom.
Matt, what are your closing thoughts and where they can find you?
I mean, I think that, you know, be patient. Be patient. I'm reminded of Braveheart. Hold. Just hold. Like, hold. Keep on doing the work. Keep on looking at things. Your market will turn. It doesn't go up always and forever. You know, it will turn. And when it does, just be ready, because most others will not be ready. Most others will not be ready, because they're also, you can also be there. Mike, how many investors are there out there right now that are doing these participation deals and equity deals and these types of deals? I can tell you, those are the deals that are going to need some other person to jump into a position. And that's when you can get a lot of equity for cheap. That's when you could potentially even get the asset. And there are a lot of that type of business out there that's not written well. There's guys that write that stuff cold. Cody and Christian, they do a great job of writing those deals cold. However, there's a lot of guys out there. I just went to a conference. He came out. He went to an investor conference. They were pitching a portfolio. It's a 54 unit portfolio. And they didn't disclose in the investor conference where they were trying to get investors on board. Their summation was, in the next 12 months, we will double rents. And when we double the rents after $250,000 project, which is at least a $700,000 project, after $250,000 project, it will double rents. And they still didn't have a cash on cash return there. So my guy literally figures it out, and he's like, and he sends me a text message. He shows me a picture and he goes, look at this up here. And I look at do the math real quick. And I was like, dude, that's under 5% cash on cash.
Yeah.
That's with the assumption they double rents.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, I'm super pumped. I'm buying that deal for pennies on the dollar in 12 to 18 months. So, but be watching those deals, go to investor conferences, listen to what they're talking about, listen to deals that they're trying to get participation on. Likely don't participate, but at least listen to them, because you're going to see some of the lunacy. Not everybody's cleansed their mind yet of these crazy deals and 4% cap rates, but do the work.
Yeah. That's where I wanted to go. Kind of my closing thoughts, but where can they find you just before I kind of round it up?
Lumberjack Landlord on YouTube and Instagram, and boot camps kicked off last week. We got a Sunday night boot camp Sunday afternoon and a Sunday night boot camp. And it was 5 hours of fun. It was a lot of fun. Good time.
Yeah. At the end of the day, what I put folks here in this is, this is the time to do the work, get prepared, get ready. You never know when it will change in your market. There will be a time it will get interesting. And, you know, we've all been preparing for it. We'll do different things. And, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I say fun because I'm ready for it. I've been through it. I know what to expect. But, for some of you, it might be your first one. It's going to sting a little bit, but, I do hope you live through several of these. The first one hurts. The second one, you get prepared. And then after that, you can really make some moves. So guys, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.